Radio Ghana.
And live from our national studios here and reaching you through all our regional FM stations, my name is Kingsley Obinchira, welcoming you to Behind the News, our news and current affairs program which examines issues from the perspective of newsmakers and experts. I am Kingsley Obinchira once again, and tonight, the brouhaha surrounding the construction of a security structure closer to the private residence of President Atta Mills won't go away readily. As moving into the presidential mansion at the Flagstaff House, the solution is CPP's Kwesindum using unfair tactics to gain a head start in the party's presidential primaries. Some elements in the party think so will be exploring that issue. The latest on the perennial gas shortage in the country as government seeks answers to the problem. And also, will the track pushers leave the ceremonial streets easily? That is one question we'll be exploring too. Behind the News, and as usual, we encourage you to be very much part of the program, very active listeners. You can get us your comments and concerns on 026-441-8767, 026-441-8767. And still in the anniversary mode, we still want to thank you so much for being part of this and getting us your concerns, even those that do not get on air readily. We appreciate it. And now to our first story. The gas shortage problem in the country is far from over in spite of all attempts to solve it. Government has announced that it has taken delivery of a consignment at Tema. Cabinet was also supposed to have met over the issue to chart the way forward on the issue. On Monday, Deputy Minister of Energy Emmanuel Amakufibua toured some gas installations to ascertain the true picture of the shortage. These are all being done to find lasting solutions to the problem. But as we speak, consumers are still carrying cylinders around looking for gas. Some believe the solution lies in banning commercial vehicles from using the product to fuel their cars. The communications specialist at the Energy Ministry is once again on the line to tell us the latest on the perennial shortage of gas. Mr. Edward Bauer, you are welcome to Behind the News. Hello, Mr. Bauer. We seem to be having a little challenge with Mr. Bauer on the line, but we'll quickly try to establish contact with him and then get him to you. Hello, Mr. Bauer. Hello? Well, I guess he can hear us readily, but you are listening live on Ubuntu 96.5 FM at Tema, and we'll get you Edward Bauer's comments very, very soon. Before then, Abraham has got a story for us.
President John Evans Atta Mills and his Botswana counterpart, Lieutenant General Seretse Kamalan Kama, has underlined the need for their colleague African heads of state to leave office at the end of their constitutionally mandated tenure. This is contained in a communique issued after a closed-door discussion in Accra. President Kama agreed to reactivate the Ghana-Botswana Joint Commission for Cooperation to boost trade and investment. Former President and African Union High Representative for Somalia, Jerry John Rawlings, says the current famine in the Horn of Africa is an opportunity for the continent to pool its resources to seek lasting peace in Somalia. Former President Rawlings says Somalia's conflict situation has persisted for 20 years, but the current famine is an opportunity for the continent to come together as one voice to support the Horn of Africa with significant humanitarian aid.
And back to our story, we managed to re-establish contact with Edward Bauer on the line. Thank you so much once again for your time.
Thank you, and good evening to your listeners.
Yes. The last time we painted a picture trying to see exactly how workable it is to have differential prices at the pump. Can you update us as to what we've done since we last spoke?
Thank you very much. It is important that we establish certain things. That one, the differential pricing is just one option that the Minister of Energy is presenting to Cabinet for Cabinet's consideration. We also have other two options. One of the options obviously being the fact that we would just take off the subsidy altogether. And then so that at the end of the day, we see how we can re-plow some funding to disadvantage people, particularly the households. Boss, the issue is that if you gauge the mood of Ghanaians now, mostly what people are saying is that they are more interested in the availability of the product as compared to the pricing. As at yesterday, I spoke to a gentleman who indicated to me that a cylinder which is supposed to cost, that's a 14.5 kilogram weight cylinder of gas, which he was supposed to pay averagely around 15 Ghana cedis. He paid 30 Ghana cedis for it. So the question you then ask yourself is that, why would you want to make a policy that would, in one way or the other, make other competitors come for that product so that the prices go up when you can take off that particular subsidy? And so one of the things that the Ministry of Energy is looking at is that, now, if you look at the total number of cars, commercial cars in Ghana, we're talking of the range of 180,000 commercial vehicles. And out of the 180,000 commercial vehicles, 40,000 of those commercial vehicles use LPG. And out of the 40,000 vehicles, 81% of those vehicles can use either LPG or petrol. So the thinking of the ministry is that if we were to take off the subsidy, what it meant was that LPG will come at par with petrol. If it comes at par with petrol, then the 81% of the 40,000 vehicles, that's roughly around 33,000 vehicles, would definitely opt for petrol. If they opt for petrol, we have about a 7-week stock of petrol, which can really survive as a country. And therefore, it then releases most of the product now to the, the households and the 19% of the commercial vehicles. So basically, that is the short term that we are looking at. But if you permit me to go further to make a point, as part of our short-term measure, one of the things we have decided to do is to also put up a badge at Takwadi. A badge that, you know, with a badge, you don't need, for example, the jetty that we have been talking about. You don't also need pipelines. And so the jetty just, a badge takes delivery of the gas from the vessels and will dispense the gas directly to the OMCs without having to use a gantry, or without having to use even a jetty or a pipeline. So these are the measures that we are looking at in terms of short term.
Yeah. Edward, you are talking about a short term, but let's understand it, because it's not everyone who might have the knowledge as to how long it will take, for instance, if we have to bypass the system we are using to offload presently to use all that you've mentioned.
Mm-hmm. What we are saying is that, you see, we have consistently indicated that the reason why we are suffering today is because of infrastructure reasons, and also because of the fact that we have had a lot of vehicles converting to the usage of LPG, and therefore it has driven the demand higher. So that's how, these are the two things we are looking at. So because of this, to be able to reduce the demand, we are trying to see how we can offload some of the clients to the LPG, and that's some of the 33,000 LPG users in terms of commercial vehicles who can easily convert to petrol. So that's the one thing we are looking at. And the point I was just making is that because of the infrastructure deficiency, we have decided that we will have yet another infrastructure we are building in Takoradi that will take care of some aspect of our country, some parts of our country. So that was exactly the explanation I'm trying to give. But besides that, boss, if you allow me, you see, in addition to what we have said, you know, yesterday we decided we had a tour of Tema Oil Refinery and its facilities. And one of the things we came to was that, you remember that we had indicated just about last week or last 2 weeks that the jetty that we use, the jetty is just the machine, or what you want to call it, a machine, for lack of a better word, that tends to discharge the, whether it is crude, whether it is refined product, whether it is LPG or what have you, discharges that into the storage tanks. That's it. The jetty that we use for petrol, we use for diesel, we use for base oils, naphtha, and what have you. What we have decided that to be able to normalize the market, what we have decided to do is that we are putting a halt on the discharge of all other petroleum products apart from LPG. So LPG will be there. So as I speak to you, yesterday there was a vessel that arrived, and I know as of today it is discharging. And consistently, we're going to use the jetty for that until we normalize it. In addition to, of course, if Parliament, cabinet approves of the decision to lift the subsidy, we take that off and we combine the badge. And the badge is going to take us about 3 months to be able to sort out. But these are all short term.
Okay.
For long term, we intend expanding the facilities. We have decided that in terms of long term, which we are going to do within 1 year, is to, one, introduce yet another pipeline from the jetty to the storage tank. The current pipeline that we have is a 6-inch pipeline that is being used. What we have decided to do is to add an additional pipeline that will be 8-inch pipeline and replace the pumps, such that in terms of the rate of flow, because the current rate of flow for us pumping the LPG from the vessel to the storage tank is about 60 to 70 metric tons per hour. What we intend to do is to increase the rate, so that, because now when you bring an average ship of about, say, 5,000 metric tons, it takes about four to five days to discharge. So if we're able to increase the rate, that means that we can always discharge very quickly and send the product into the market. So that's one of the areas we're going to look at. And we also want to build storage tanks, five different storage tanks, in addition to the only storage tank that we have. Remember that as a country, we only have only one storage tank. That's a capacity of about 6,300 metric tons.
Okay.
So what we intend doing is to add five different storage tanks. But four of those storage tanks are going to be buffer stocks. Anytime there's a shortage like this, we can deploy those products into the market. So basically, this is what we are doing.
You've spoken about, Edward, please let me come in here. You've spoken about the fact that you want to stop the discharge of all other petroleum products and then do with the gas. Will that not affect them too and then create another problem?
No, it wouldn't. Because as I told you, the current situation that we find ourselves is an emergency situation. We have stocks for petrol and diesel for at least 7 weeks. So what it means is that if we stop the discharge of those products, all that we'll be doing is to deploy the storage, our stocks into the market. That's exactly what we're doing. This thing, look, boss, the truth of the matter is that there's panic buying in the market. People are buying 4, 5, 6 cylinders into their homes. That is why we're having this problem. So if you're able to flood the market with the LPG, what it means is that after a week, 2 or 3, we'll be able to normalize it. When we normalize it, at that time, we'll find a way of regulating how we bring the product in. So basically, this is just for a short term, but at least it won't take us more than 3 to 4 weeks to be able to flood the market with LPG.
Good.
And within that particular period, we'll have enough other petroleum products to really supply the market.
Yeah, but have you also got the information, and you just gave us one typical example, that for some of the stations, that is, those selling the gas, they also create artificial shortage so that they can have so much from it in terms of extra profit?
Yeah, that's true. There is a, we do know that, yes, there's panic buying, that's one. There's also hoarding. That is true. There are people who want to have a situation where, you know, that businessmen, to all intents and purposes, would always want to maximize profit. So anytime there is an opportunity to maximize profit, even if it is at the peril of a neighbor, they sometimes will be very callous enough to do that. So you have situations where people do those things. But the MPA, as an agency under the Ministry of Energy, is taking steps at that. And particularly, we have also appealed to the Association of Oil Marketing Companies not to indulge in that practice, because it is not in anybody's interest to create artificial shortage. But what then that means is that you have, it affects manpower, it affects even the terms of productivity hours, and at the end of the day, it affects the economy as a country.
Beyond an appeal, can't you do anything?
No, that's not it. All that we are doing is that, one, we are going to flood the market, say that even hoarding in itself will not be an incentive. That's the first thing. The second thing is that MPA, which is an agency under the Ministry of Energy, has, as part of its mandate, to see to it that that does not happen. And therefore, I do know that Mr. Alex Mould and his team are seriously also looking at that aspect of the problem, where you have OMC deliberately hoarding the LPG, saying that people become so desperate that they are ready to pay any amount of money for it. We are looking at all those factors. And that I'm saying that as a ministry, we are looking at it as in a holistic form of it. But I'm very convinced that within a week, 2, thereabout, we should be able to normally clear all the queues and then we can then push in with the long-term plans that we have in place.
Well, we'll still be monitoring and getting you informed and asking the relevant questions as we try to normalize the situation. But for now, I want to thank you so much for joining us here. Edward Bauer is communications specialist at the Energy Ministry, telling us about what has been done to improve the situation of gas in the country. Behind the news, linking up with you on all our Ignite FM stations live on Garden City Radio in Kumasi. We are moving on to our next story. If the saying that coming events cast their shadows is anything to go by, then Ghanaians should expect another keenly fought elections next year. Recent developments on the political landscape present an interesting battle of wits and verbal exchanges, particularly between the ruling NDC and the opposition MPP. From one accusation to the other, the latest is a verbal warfare between the two parties on a supposed gift of mansion to President Mills by Reg Manuel Gray Limited. The government has parried all the accusations, describing them as malicious lies, but the MPP thinks the government is being paid back in its own coin because of a similar debacle during the administration of former President Kufuor. Now, the MPP is asking President Mills to move into the presidential mansion, which they claim has been constructed with security features. Standogbe is a member of government communications team and is on the line to restate the position of government on this matter. You are welcome to the program, Stan.
Good evening, Kingsley, and greetings to your listeners.
There are some observers, different perspectives, saying that communication-wise, the issue in trying to explain exactly what has happened with this supposed gift mansion, I'm using it advisedly, it's not been handled well, that is, from government. How do you share that sentiment?
Well, thank you very much, Kingsley. I think in the first place, it ought to be explained or stated quite clearly that there is no mansion and there is no supposed gift anywhere. The story that came up and which suggested that the president has built a new mansion has clearly, and as reported by your own reporter, Seth Ayia, is false. There is no such mansion at the Reg Manuel Gray Estates behind the residence of His Excellency the President. And what it is and has been explained is that a facility is being put up by the real estate owners, Reg Manuel Gray, which His Excellency the President has indicated that he would want to rent just to ensure the comfort of his security detail. And that is just to demonstrate the caring nature of His Excellency the President, noticing the effects that the weather has on the security detail and the fact that he affects them also in many other ways to see how best he can ensure that they are appropriately accommodated. I do not understand or just know how else, you know, some people would want the issues to be explained. And as you rightly said in your introduction, the MPP might have certain positions, but respectfully, this matter cannot be compared to the case of President John Kufuor.
Well, let's come to one issue. Yesterday, we tried to explore it and looking at perhaps why even the media should pay attention to it. And we had Vice Azim of Ghana Integrity Initiative speaking about it. But we understand you have a few concerns. What are those concerns?
Well, I think that Vitus Azim's position is most unfortunate. As an anti-corruption campaigner, if indeed it's committed to ensuring that this country is free of corruption and would want to get to the truth or get to know the truth of the matter, I'd have expected him to conduct his own independent investigations of the matter. As he was seeking to suggest that why should journalists be taken to the place? And I was disappointed in him, particularly because of the job that he's supposed to be doing, when he says that the fact that the journalists were taken there by the communications outfit of the government, there is no evidence that where they were taken to is the land that or the building that the newspaper that reported the story either was talking about. Now, when he, Vitus Azim, and the Ghana Integrity Initiative organize these programs, do they invite the media? Or the media just wakes up and decides that let's go and cover this program? There are various ways of letting people know what the facts are. And I think that his pronouncement cast a serious slur on the reputation of the journalists that went to the site, including your own reporter, Sethi, here, to suggest that they were parked in a vehicle and taken to some site, and that could not have been the site. I mean, for an anti-corruption campaigner, if he himself had doubts, instead of relying on opposition tabloids that would state a certain position, I'd have expected that he could have also gone to look out and find out if indeed there is a mansion existing within Regimano Gray, and particularly behind the residence of His Excellency the President, you know, or not. Our position, Kingsley, is that, yes, the media has every right to want to find out information or put out information about politicians, but that information by itself must be factual. When a newspaper publishes that the president has put up a mansion, and the evidence on the ground is that even the real estate company is now putting up the foundation to a quarters, a boys' quarters-like, you know, structure, the two are not the same. And we cannot begin to shift the goalpost, you know, that the president must move to a Flagstaff house. I have found that argument most laughable. One, because His Excellency the President lives in an official residence at the castle. The castle is the office of the president and also serves as residence of the president. The Flagstaff house necessarily cannot be christened the office of the president. That is another edifice under the office of the president, same as we have the Pedrassi Lodge. We can strike the argument that why is the president not staying in Pedrassi Lodge?
Stan, just hold it a moment. We've mentioned the NPP. We want to know clearly the position they are articulating on this particular one. And we have the Deputy Director of Communications of the NPP, Yabu Adin Asamoah, on the line. Wadi, you are welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What is the NPP saying specifically about President Mills and this issue about Regimano Gray, supposedly gifted mansion?
No, MPP hasn't said anything specifically as a party.
Yeah.
We are just following the unfolding events and are rather surprised at the conflicting stories coming out. But the core issue, to my mind, as I speak now, is whether the president ought to be paying for the upkeep of his security, the comfort of security from his pocket. And whether that really is governance as we seek to build it in this country. The president is being taken care of by the state as the first citizen of the land. Those police are there and being paid for by the state. So you have this peculiar situation where pretending that the president is something else has led the NDC into this situation where the president has to assume this ridiculous position. And that is our worry, because the president deserves security. In the first instance, at the first level, the ideal security would have been official premises. The castle is not good enough. The Flagstaff House, Jubilee House to Flagstaff House, has a residence for the president. It's not just an office, it has a residence for the president. Assuming the president doesn't want to go there for one or other reason, it would be interesting to know why. Because neglecting it as it stands, and spending money on a private residence to bring it up to security standards is what the president is embarrassed about, so that you get involved this convolution about a private home and then I'll renovate it, I'll pay for it myself, and all those things, which are causing the funny contortions.
But please let me come in here. The other concern is that even if, and assuming the president has moved into a state mansion, once he's the president, the house also deserves some security. Don't you share that concern?
Of course I do. But that is why I'm saying that if we had been upfront, if as a governance-minded nation, the president's handlers are not taking certain positions which were before, trapping them into this state, there wouldn't be any problem at all. If they recognize that indeed, now that the president is a president, even when he is no more the president and he lives in a private home or a state-provided home, he still would need security. And that security detail must have facilities for their use. But because they've taken unreasonable positions before, now they are trapped into maintaining those positions. So they cannot be upfront about the necessity that we are confronted with.
So presently,
nobody is saying the president shouldn't be protected. The president deserves protection. What the president are saying now is that they are going to build a toilet facility, and then at one moment it's a three-bedroom house, in another moment it's a two-bedroom house, and all that. In one instance it's a gift, in another instance it's supposed to be rented, in another period it's supposed to be paid for.
Yeah. So,
why should the president pay a mortgage to house police who are protecting him at the expense of the state?
What about if he sees it as his responsibility because it's his private residence?
Yeah, but that's what we said, that even within the context of the fact that he has become head of state, his privacy is elevated to statehood at some level. So if we as a nation recognize that need, and the NDC are not taking such an extreme position, they wouldn't be in this embarrassment now. That is a problem, because even though it's private, his wife lives there.
Okay.
His wife lives there, and his wife is also deserves state protection. She is the first lady of this land. So the conundrum the NDC find themselves in is that, as with many, many other state situations they had, including the aircraft for the military and the presidential executive jet that they are pretending is a troop transport, including the gas shortages, they took so many unreasonable positions on national issues, matters of national interest, that now they've been trapped by those holier-than-thou attitudes. So they cannot come out and tell the people of Ghana the truth and assume the necessary positions required.
Yeah, people are saying for the MPP's politics as usual. They did it. It's now at 10.
It is for them to determine. They are in charge. In 2012, the people who vote based on issues, the people who vote on what the NDP did or did not do, is a typical excuse whenever they are confronted with establishing the necessary requirements to convince the people of Ghana about the necessity to take certain bold decisions on behalf of the state. They say, oh, but the NDP did it and he didn't do it, and yet they resort to.
Yeah, but well, here somewhere. We want to thank you very much for sharing that one with us from the perspective of the NDC. Thank you so much for your time. Yabo Abiasamwa is the Deputy Director of Communications of the MPP, but we still have Stan Dugbe on the line. You heard the other concerns of your colleague from the other side. A quick response before we look at...
Thank you very much, Kingsley. You see, the MPP and my former anti-corruption campaigner who jump shipped, you know, in the middle of his work are not listening to themselves. This was the same person who was raising issues about, you know, why should he live in a private house and not. And then when you pointed out to him, he said that, yes, I mean, the house ought to be protected. Point number one, Kingsley, the handlers of His Excellency the President himself and the NDC have absolutely no regrets for raising issues about President Kufuor's house renovation. President Mills is not bothered about paying the rent of his security detail the same way that he does not regret that he does not take per diem anytime he travels or spend unnecessary state money on himself. I mean, it is not anything new for him. As president, whether he lives in Flagstaff, he lives in Pebiase or the castle, his private residence will still be protected. The president lives in a state facility. President Kufuor said that he was not going to live in that facility because it was not conducive. Kingsley, go to the castle and find out how many extra bedrooms were created in that castle during the era of President Kufuor, who said the castle was not conducive enough for him to stay in. The other point that ought to be raised, Kingsley, is that, you see, we will not get anywhere with this attempt. You know, sometimes when you try to stick mud on certain surfaces, they never stick. President Mills, these things will never stick on him because the people of this country know very well who it is that they are dealing with. They know that there is no mansion. They know that the president wants to take care of his security detail. He will not allow them to stop under the vagaries of the weather. And he will pay the rent for them.
Please let me come in here, Stan. Yes, the other concerns coming up relates to the fact that the letters we saw coming from the president was on letterheads of the office of the president and had no reference numbers. We had copies here. The question is, couldn't the president have written it in his private capacity then, if that is what we are talking about, that he's privately financing those projects.
He's the president of this country, and the letterhead is for the president of this country. He just says that, yes, get this thing done for the security detail, and I will pay for it. If anybody doubts the authenticity of the letters or whether the letters went in April or not, please, can they go to Regimano Gray? I'm sure that when they have letters, they stamp received on them and check whether they received those letters. I think that even if you want to impugn the integrity of government, and for that matter, His Excellency the President, let us extend it to the private company, Regimano Gray. Go find out whether any such letters were sent. As president, he sends out a letter, and if he sends it out on his letterhead or on or the complimentary note that has Office of the President on it, it is totally in order. I do not see how that validates the porous journalism that some MPP tabloids continue to put out. There is no mansion anywhere, and those letters cannot validate the claim that there is a mansion.
So, Frank, please let me ask quickly, will President Mills ever move to the Flagstaff House?
The president has no response to that. The president is living and working from the castle. The castle is a state property and remains the office of the president. The president and His Excellency the Vice President use the Flagstaff House the same way that they use Pedrasse Lodge and other state lodges in the regions as and when they so determined that they would want to do. I have heard arguments or I've heard positions from some members of the New Patriotic Party that the Flagstaff House has a security cortex and whatever. They should go and ask Kojo and Pini whether they built a security quarters to it.
We have to wrap it up here, Stan.
You knew Kingsley, you knew that there were plans to demolish parts of GBC to build a security quarters for Flagstaff House. Has that been done? The decision to use whichever facility in this country remains the prerogative of His Excellency the President.
Okay.
For those who do not think that the castle is not conducive, let them think so.
Stan Dogwe is a presidential staffer and joined us on the line. Thank you so much for your time. Behind the news. Live on Sunrise FM, Kofodia, and Radio Savannah, Tamale. We are taking a quick break. We'll be back. Behind the news, also live on Radio Central, Cape Coast. We have some of your tests here. Pakwe Syndrome is right in its assertion of the economy. Prices are escalating, but inflation is going down. Well, that's a story we'll be trying to look at later on. Prince from Obuasi sent that test due. Michael from Kumasi, what good will it do to government to intentionally create gas shortage? Let's take it easy. Things are going to be okay. And Sham from Yendi, whether gas or no gas, NDC will be rejected in 2012. And from Inkum Tenga, if President Mills should build a mansion, what has it got to do with the public? Baba Musa UDS, the so-called mansion issue must be allowed to rest. Many media houses in the country are deliberately taking undue advantage of the repeal of the criminal law to publish a falsehood. And Michael from Kumasi again. What is wrong about the idea of a caring president raising a structure for our brothers in the security service? And Baba, the use of gas by commercial drivers is a controversial one and cannot be banned. Therefore, policymakers must think outside the box in order to have a lasting solution to the gas shortage problem. Behind the news, we move on to the story in relation to the CPP and Dr. Pakwe Syndrome. The CPP is yet to go to its National Congress to elect executives and a flag bearer for elections 2012. Last week, EU for 2012 Exploratory Committee released its findings after a national tour to assess the chances of Dr. Pakwe Syndrome as the CPP's presidential candidate. Some CPP stalwarts have expressed reservations about the findings, saying the exercise was meant to give Dr. Syndrome a head start in the elections. How is the Exploratory Committee taking such comments? Richard Niyama is the spokesperson for the group, and we are glad he's joining us on the line now. We warmly welcome you to the program.
Thank you very much, Kingsley.
Yes, right from the beginning, you made us understand that the exercise you undertook was a private venture, but critics are now saying that it was just meant to favor Dr. Indung's bid for re-election as a flag bearer. Is that so?
I disagree with that stand, and let me state the reasons why we embarked on this exploratory research once again. First of all, Dr. Indium has stated on several platforms that throughout his life, he has never failed like he did in 2008 elections. Now, he has the intentions of contesting again in 2012, and he has said that coming from a business background as he is, he wouldn't go into a contest that he doesn't know what is going to be the possible outcomes. And so he set up an exploratory committee to find out answers to this before he decides on whether or not he's going to contest for the 2012 general elections. And so as for me, as to whether the committee has been set up to favor Dr. Indium or not, it is not an issue. If anybody thinks that he or she is also interested in contesting for president or MP or whatever, and the person wants to conduct exploratory research, the person is at liberty to do so.
Yeah. But still going forward on this, don't you think this is an exercise that should have been sponsored by the CPP to look at even the viability of other potential candidates?
Well, the CPP, I am sure, as we speak now, has an opinion on why it lost the 2008 elections. I don't expect that as of now, the CPP shouldn't have conducted a research. In fact, I've heard some people mention that on some platforms after we came out with our research. But the point is this, Dr. Indium as an individual, whether or not the CPP conducts research or not, he also reserves the right to conduct a research to ascertain his viability. In any case, the research that we undertook also made several recommendations that are very essential to the success of the CPP. And so to us, whether Dr. Indium contests or not, whoever is going to contest has the advantage of using the recommendations that we've made to his or her advantage. And I think nobody should be annoyed because of this in the CPP.
Yeah, you are talking about the recommendations being accessible and perhaps amenable to any other candidate who gets elected. Can you stress one or two that you came out with?
Yes, for example, we have said that the type of campaign in 2012 should involve a lot of youth, because our recommendations reveal that there's a wider perception out there that the CPP is not a welcoming place to the youth. And so we are recommending that the CPP should right from now allow some youth to be infused into the leadership and rank and file of the CPP so that it becomes more attractive to the youth. We also recommended that there should be a creation of a strong media team that would be responsible for information dissemination comprehensively at all levels and in all languages that are understoodable by Ghanaians. We have also made recommendations on funding, how to sell the candidate, staying away from politics of insult, and rebranding the CPP or making it more attractive to a lot more people. So I think the recommendations are far out there in the media, and anyone who is interested in it has the right to look at it and use it.
Well, natural concerns, but are you daunted by the criticisms you hear all around?
Not at all, because the team expected some of these criticisms. And even from the angles that the criticisms are coming from too, it is not surprising, because these are people who are normally known to be in that kind of habit. And our expectation that all members of the CPP should from now onwards learn from lessons of 2008 experience and begin to unite under any leadership of the CPP. Because if you have even Barack Obama today as chairman or flag bearer or whatever of the CPP, and the members of the CPP decide not to cooperate with him, there's no way he's going to be able to turn the CPP around. So I think it is high time the members of the CPP learned how to give support to their leaders so that we can push the party forward.
Yeah. As a youth in the party, are you not concerned that even up to now, the party has not been able to fix the date for the Congress that has been advertised over the period?
To me, it's an issue that is very worrying. But I think it is also inevitable. Because, seriously, over the past few years that the CPP has been competing for elections, it is so sad that whenever there is time for constituency elections or regional elections or whatever, people go there and there's no competition. They only go to appoint somebody that you, Kwejo or Kwabena, you should become chairman, you should become secretary, you should become youth organizer, and then the people who are appointed come and relax. Now, because of some active organization that has been going on in the party, people have become interested in these positions and they are competing for it. Because of this competition, which the CPP has not been experiencing for some time now, it is creating some problems for some people who do not want to leave power. And some have ended up in court, others have ended up in conflicts that are being resolved, and others. I think that if we are able to go through this process, and then it becomes the standard, and from now onwards, all CPP constituency polling stations and regional elections become very competitive, it is then that we are going to have the quality of people who shall be able to go out there to compete with the NDC and the MPP to get voters for the CPP in 2012.
I want to thank you very much for joining us tonight, Richard Niama.
Thank you very much.
That's the spokesperson for the exploratory committee that tried to see the viability of Dr. Parkwesin Doom as a presidential candidate. But they are telling us that they are also looking at the report helping any other candidate who gets that slot. Let's put it on record that we booked to speak to an official directly from the party, but as we tried on air, we were not able to get through to that official. When we manage to get him, we'll get him to also share with us what the party thinks about the whole thing going on behind the news. Coming to you live from Radio Ghana, live on Unique 95.7 FM. We want to move on to our next story. For many residents of Accra, truck pushers are very much part of the regular traffic on the streets. Whether they are carrying people's wares or collecting scraps, these truck pushers are forever busy crisscrossing the roads, irrespective of the tag given to them. However, all their activities on ceremonial roads are to cease from September 15th. This is according to a directive of the Accra Metropolitan Assembly. The question being posed by many is whether this ban will succeed, and more especially, coming on the heels of the ban on hawking on ceremonial streets. How will this work? Numo Blafo is with the Public Relations Office of the Accra Metropolitan Assembly and is on the line to tell us exactly how they are going to make this one work. Numo, you are welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you very much.
We are looking at truck pushers now, and the quick question that comes up is, have we finished with the hawkers?
Yes, actually, we won't say we've really finished with the hawkers. It's ongoing, and I don't think we need to finish with them before we start any other thing, because they are all part and parcel of the problems and the nuisance that we experience on our streets and the roads.
Some will say that perhaps let's finish with one and also claim success and then use the examples there to move on to the other challenges. Don't you share their view then?
You see, we wouldn't say we've not succeeded, and we won't also say we've succeeded 100% in clearing the hawkers from some of the major roads. Actually, if you look at some of the roads that's in question, we'll be able to clear these hawkers from there. But one thing that they are also doing is that when we are able to clear them from one place, they find other avenues to embark on their activities. So that process is still on, and we hope that with this coming on board, we'll be able to, at least at the end, say we'll be able to clear the nuisance that we've been experiencing on our major routes.
Just a few weeks ago, you were complaining about the fact that you've not had that necessary assistance from the media, and they seem to be pouring sand into whatever you are doing. Has it improved?
Well, it has improved. It has improved, I would say, because the kind of media reportage we were having before has somehow ceased. And I think the media is also realizing some of the problems they also create when the AMA comes up with certain regulations. Because we're not doing it for just the AMA, but we're doing it for the whole of society. Because if a driver or a motorist should hit a hawker on the street, actually it's not the AMA who is going to bear the cost of treatment, or it's not the AMA who will be taken to court. It's the motorist or the driver who will bear the brunt of that issue. All the same, we wish that we all cooperate, because when something is not good, we should stand as one and say it's bad. Because it will not be bad for one person and be good for the other. We all need to collaborate to make our city as best as we can.
Yeah, let's come to the present one. Hawkers are the track pushers are to be pushed off the streets, if we have to use it that way, from September 15th. Is that a date?
I think 15th or 25th.
Okay. How exactly are you going about this?
We started by meeting with the executives of these track pushers, and the executive of the track pushers, and then the track owners. Because some of them are owners, and then those who push rent from them. So we met with their executives, and actually when we laid down our plans to them, they agreed. Because they also knew that as much as we are all living in, it's a human institution, nobody can claim perfection. Therefore, the problems we're realizing on our streets, they also bear the same, or they also share the same concerns with us. That, yes, it's true that they've also been receiving reports of these people who go about collecting scrap, being the same people who remove the metal grills from some of our drain inlets, which is a major problem to pedestrians and motorists as a whole. So actually they agreed, and we all came up to the kind of regulations we're going to put or to bring about to bear these instances. And they even told us, or they suggested some of the roads that they can also use in lieu of the major roads. So it isn't something that we did in isolation, but we did it in conjunction with the track pushers and track owners executives.
So let's understand it well. Where are they not supposed to be?
Especially the major roads or ceremonial roads. The Liberation Road, we're looking at the High Street from the old Parliament House to Tete Kwashi. We're also looking at a road like the Kojo Thompson Road. But you see, it's not the whole stretch of the Kojo Thompson Road that we're restricting them, because in between there is this Makola Market, and we're looking at the railways area where there are marketing activities. So we say at those areas, they can still operate from there. But then we don't want them moving, for example, the airport area, the airport bypass, and within the CBD and all other areas. And we're looking at the Malam Odoko Road or the Kaneshi Malam Road. And you see, Kaneshi Market is also on this road. So what we're saying that from Sakaman Junction to First Light, they should not pass, or they should not use that route. But in front of the Kaneshi Market and its environs, they can, operate from there. And they even suggested that it's true what we're saying, because there are other artillery routes they can use without even coming on the main routes, which they knew. They themselves exposed themselves to danger and all that. So it isn't something that we just pushing or imposing anything on them, but it's something that we all sat together, discussed extensively to come up with. We took their own suggestions into consideration before coming up with the press release.
You've mentioned the, and naturally there will be executives somewhere who will be representing these groups or these people. Sometimes the message will not get down to those who will be pushing the tracks. So what are you doing to ensure that, there is proper communication right to the base where it matters?
Well, they themselves complained about the language barrier. Most of their staff or their members don't understand either English or Chi, and therefore they will need to be spoken to in their own language. So we've asked the executives to get all their people. I think on Friday we're going to meet them, and whatever we will say, they themselves will translate it into their own language for them to really understand what the AMA is saying.
So you are trusting on them to do it for you?
We're going to do it together. Actually, we have people too who understand Dagbani within the AMA.
Mm-hmm.
And we are coming up with this jingle whereby the announcement will only be in Dagbani and Hausa. so that at least it will be the language that they understand, and it will be the language that they can understand perfectly well and know what we are saying, so that at least there won't be a situation whereby somebody will say, I did not understand or I did not hear what the AMA has said.
But naturally, before you came on to the issue of the hawkers, it was the same thing you made us understand. Education is starting it. There will be a campaign so that when it takes off, everybody will understand the process and also know why it should be so. Are you not envisaging any challenge or challenges so far for this new one?
We knew that in every situation there will be challenges, but yet we resolved to overcome those challenges. You see, for the hawkers issue, we took a whole month to do this public education. We were in the media, we were in all these 11 submetros, we met with them, we discussed extensively. And if you recall, I knew that that day, first day of April, when we began the implementation, we went around with the media, and I knew that your house too was part of the people we went out with, and they will acknowledge that all the routes we went through, in short, we didn't see anybody, and even those who saw us started running away, which means that they've heard it. Everyone has gotten the message. But where the problem started was when you realize that it became like a daily basis, where the same media we used to educate these people now started going to them and trying to come up with, issues which we've already discussed, and we knew that we've overcome or we've passed it. So these people became bold and started coming back on the street. But then, as we started, if we had continued that way, I don't think these people would have come back. But you see, radio is very powerful. It goes so far, and people listen or even hear from others. So when things like that happen, and they are getting, other views from other people, so that to the extent that they will think that they've got the support of the media, then they became very bold, and they wouldn't even mind what the AMA was saying, to the extent that they became confrontational. Because there are issues, instances when these hawkers have attacked our personnel. And as I'm talking to you now, we've not even prosecuted one person for just selling. All those we prosecuted are those who, in one way or the other, attacked our personnel. So you see, if the media will know, or as it stands, that the media should inform, educate, and entertain, and they will educate and inform the people on the need of the need to obey rules, I think we'll go a long way to solving this problem, instead of the media going to support these same people whom they knew are rather breaking a law. Because this street hawking bylaw has been passed.
Mm-hmm.
Gone through all the processes that it should go through, and it's now a law.
Okay.
So anybody who flouts it is offending that law, and that person must be made to know that it's offending a law.
Okay.
You understand? But what will happen is that the people will come, and the media will ask them what they did, but rather they will start to condemn the AMA for doing its work. And
Education is still going on. We've not stopped.
It's still going on.
So we'll come back to it some other time.
Okay.
I want to thank you very much for your time this evening. Numo Blafo is Public Relations Officer of the Accra Metropolitan Assembly. And now we want to go back to Boku. The uneasy calm currently prevailing in Boku was nearly punctured with the reported attack on two mampuses in the area. The Boku Municipal Chief Executive, Musa Abdullahi, has been working hard to ensure the peace being enjoyed in the area is not compromised, and has consequently been trying to aid efforts at arresting the suspects. So what is the latest on the efforts being made to find the alleged criminals who committed the act? Fortunately, Mr. Musa Abdullahi has joined us on the line to update us on what is happening in Boku presently. Now, welcome once again to Behind the News.
Thank you very much, Kisley.
Yes. The last time you assured us that the security was working very hard to apprehend those who committed that act. Where are you at the moment with it?
Yeah, I did promise that. And precisely so, the security were able to arrest two suspects who are allegedly connected to the attack of our two Mampushi brothers who were working on their farmlands. The two suspects have been put before court and they have since been remanded in prison custody.
So you believe that because of the case is in court, we don't want to go deeply into it, but are there not others connected to it?
Yeah, this is in every criminal activity, you will find that there will be others who will conspire with other people to commit that crime. The investigations haven't ended yet. There's ongoing investigations to get anybody who is connected to this attack of Mampushi. Because for us, any individual who has an issue against another individual should use the appropriate authorities for redress. Nobody has the right to take the laws into his or her own hands to do whatever he or she wants. So we are not going to sit back to allow individuals to do whatever they like. We are in a country with laws and we must respect the laws of the country.
So what is the state of the victims, those who were attacked?
Yeah, they are doing well. They are responding to treatment. Their condition is stable. The day they were attacked, quickly we organized ambulance from Boko to transfer them to the Bolgatanga Regional Hospital for treatment. The doctors did so well. They stabilized their condition. The following day, the regional chairman, who is a Kusasi, and some of my constituency chairman and Kusasi's elders went to the hospital to visit the victims. When we got there, they spoke with us. We had opportunity. We spoke with them. They were in stable condition. We interacted with them, and we assured them that we were going to do everything humanly possible to arrest whosoever committed, the attack. And the people were so happy. We spoke with the doctors.
Yeah.
The doctors said that there was a need to refer them to Accra for further treatment.
Okay.
We got in touch with Maha Mayarga in Accra. As soon as the aircraft landed, Maha Mayarga was there with ambulance and picked the victims to 37 military hospital, organized hotel accommodation for the relatives. And I'm just explaining this thing for you to see how people, elders,
you've made the effort to keep the peace. Yes. It's supposed to have life.
Of showing that what happened was regrettable.
Okay.
Nobody sanctioned it. And the victims are happy. Their family members are happy.
It is the hope of behind the news that peace will continue as the people are still reassured. But for now, I want to thank you very much because of our time. Thank you so much. Mr. Musa Abdullahi is the Boku MCE. We're talking about the peace in Boku. Before we go, AU Farouk and Tamale is saying, Mr. Ken Crunchy's publication on Mills Mansion is totally mischievous and propaganda. He should give us a break. And Francis from Bolga, is that to suggest that LPD subsidy for domestic use will stop? Then we will return to the use of firewood and charcoal. I don't think that was what was said. Koba New Edubiasi, oh politicians, please let Ghanaians know about the truth of this matter of the mansion of the president. And Ziga from Donkokrum, the president takes salary, so there is nothing wrong with him renting a residence for his guards. And Sham, we have you again here. If you reject envelopes, why grabbing a mansion now? God save Madagana. I don't understand that one perfectly. But AU Farouk, indeed, there is no cause for alarm. The government is working hard to bring more gas into the Ghanaian market. And Adam Smiler, Takwa, I think the gas problem has to do with enough storage facility that can take care of both the southern and northern sectors of the country. Since the market is available, the problem is not who buys and what purpose. Why should a building put up by taxpayers' money become white elephants? It will be good if our president occupies the Jubilee House. Kofi Amwa Legon, talking about the Flagstaff House. And that is where we wrap it all up for today. On behalf of Hano Wusu Bempa, who sat at the controls for us, and then our production assistants, Victoria Haji, Olivia Mwa Danso, and Mary Jaku, and our production team of Bright Agama, Edmund Tete, and Christopher Sidu, and our summarizer, Abraham Donko. My name is Kinsley of Interest.